Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It is a Monday. It is Final Four week, but we talk about the NBA here. And joining us from Naples, Florida, the headquarters of all NBA information you could ever want, is our front office insider, Bobby Marks. Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm very well. And joining us from New York City, where he's there to cover in his old days, the Brooklyn Nets, is Tim Bontemps. Hello, Timothy.
Hello, Brian. Throwback day. I get to talk to Bobby and cover the Nets. It's like,
I know, it's amazing.
All over again.
It's funny, before we get onto this podcast, and this is regarding Tim Bontemps, I told my wife, Tim, that I was doing a podcast with you, and it reminded her of the old days, because when I worked for the Nets, Tim Bontemps was the only person my wife followed on Twitter. And she lived she would not watch the games, but she would just follow Tim Bontemps during the game, and she would get the updates by him. And he was not very opinionated to an extent. So as for my wife, she appreciates the time with the Nets that you kept her somewhat sane.
Wow, that's a compliment. I never knew that.
Good job,
that's
Tim.
That's funny.
I don't think he'll amount to anything, though, Bobby, based on. So something happened over the weekend here. I don't really want to talk too much about the actual facts with what happened with Kristaps Porzingis and this allegation, because I just don't know what happened, and it's a he said, she said, and I'd rather not get into that. However, an interesting fact that was reported by Woj over the weekend, and we have Bobby here, and so I want to ask about this. So in this case, Porzingis had something, an issue with that involved the police. And Woj reported that the Knicks brought this to the Mavericks' attention before they did the trade. And so, Bobby, I wanted to know, what are the ethics within the NBA about when if you're doing a trade with a guy, how much do you say? I mean, he hasn't been charged or arrested or anything. This is a situation that's a little bit in the gray area. How is this operate? How do you expect teams to operate with situations like this?
Well, by the letter of the law, Brian, and how it's written in the operations manual, the only disclosures that you have to make are regarding medical. So if a player was previously injured, what type of insurance you have, if there's anything in the future that prevents him from playing basketball, that's where, from a disclosure standpoint, that's what you have to make available to that team. And it's funny, I talked to two teams today regarding that, just a general question as far as if you had a player who was being investigated by, do you have to let that teammate aware, the team that you're trading with, made aware? And I got a consensus no from both teams. Now, it's a little bit different now because the league is involved. The league was involved before the trade happened. They were well aware of it. I guess they were notified in December here. So, if the league was not made aware, I don't feel like the team has an obligation, to make that available to the other team. I think if the league is made available, I certainly think the league has an obligation, especially in a trade like this. So yes, it is a gray area. It looks like New York did make Dallas aware of it. But I don't think it's not written in the rules. I mean, the only thing written in the rules is as far as from a medical standpoint.
So, so Dallas had to know about it, and I'm sure that they had to do some due diligence, which is another reason why this trade really probably didn't come together as fast as it sounded like it did. There was probably quite a bit of time that led into that, but I would assume for a player of this value that you would do some due diligence. But even in this trade now, Hardaway as well. Tim Hardaway had a stress fracture last year, or was it a stress reaction last year? Do you remember, Tim, which it was?
I believe it was a stress reaction.
Yeah, so he had a stress reaction injury in his leg last year. And he's come to the Mavericks, and let's just be honest, he was in the trade to provide I guess, I don't know. He was in the trade as a salary dump. I don't know how else to put it without putting it kindly. It wasn't like the Mavericks were trying to, you know, we're trying to get a player who they thought was going to be a major piece going forward. But nonetheless, you know, he had a stress injury last year and he's now got a stress reaction this year and is having surgery or already had surgery to put a rod in his leg. I mean, Bobby, in that situation, what about old injuries? I mean, like, what about if the guy's got an old injury and is still being treated? What's the gray area of how much you reveal? Or are you counting on the team to know that he had a stress injury and to just know that?
Well, Brian, when you do a trade and you are sharing medical information, you've got to go back to, you know, when that player was on your roster. So with Hardaway Jr., you know, you signed him in 2017. So whatever in that 2 year span, as far as previous injuries, current injuries, and basically what you do is you say is if the condition is resolved or if it's ongoing. Now, I don't know how the Knicks phrased it as far as where his current medical injury is, as far as the resolved situation. But yeah, I mean, you're basically putting everything out there, as far as previous and current, and current injuries. Because if in case, I mean, there's been situation, I think it was it Jeff Green a long time ago where Oklahoma City did not disclose it to Boston. And I think it cost them a draft pick. If you don't disclose it, it will come back and get you there.
Yeah, I think there was an issue with the Timberwolves and Blazers with Martell Webster.
Oh, yeah, with his back injury, right?
I don't remember. Yeah, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago now. The Blazers and the Wolves had this little dispute going on. I don't remember what the genesis of it was, but they were sort of actively working little espionage against each other. Remember Brandon Roy was declared disabled and then the Timberwolves brought him back and with his knee injury and sent him back onto the Blazers books, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And
that is correct. There also was an offer sheet signed for a Nick Batum, I believe, as part of that.
Oh, right.
Didn't the Timberwolves sign Nick Batum to an offer sheet?
I don't remember that, but it sounds possible.
I believe you're correct. I believe you're correct, Tim.
So I just looked this up. So this was in 2013. The Timberwolves traded for Martell Webster, found out that he had a back injury, although he had missed some time. He had missed some time with a back injury before, but long story short, the Blazers paid the Wolves $1.5 million to settle a dispute. So the dispute was settled several years later. The trade was actually in 2010. They didn't resolve it until 2013. So there is some stuff that, you know, that goes on here, Bobby. Now knowing what you know about, I mean, do these details at all change the way you view that Knicks-Mavericks trade at this point?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think how I look at it from Dallas' perspective, if they knew what the situation was with Porzingis, take away what's going on with Hardaway, with Jr., to be able to give up two future first-round picks, you have to have a strong comfort level that whatever the situation will eventually be resolved. I mean, you're not going in here with blinders on. So, no, I don't. You know, it's you know, we talked about Tim Hardaway Jr. as a salary dump, but he's still owed, you know, I mean, he was a cap filler, but he still owed, what, 2 years, like $38
million?
Yeah. Somewhere around there. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
There was at least one team that thought they'd get three first-round picks for him this summer to open up space for the Knicks. Oh. To sign max free agents. So that was definitely, you definitely have to look at that even more now as dead money than before.
Yeah, I agree. But no, I don't look at it differently as far as where, you know, I know the New York papers get caught up in a lot of things here. And I know Tim is a former New York Post, a writer there, but I think, you know, I don't think the Knicks pulled something over with Dallas, you know, pulled the blanket over their eyes here. I think Dallas knew what was going on. This is why they made the deal. If there was any hesitation, especially for an organization that's been scrutinized the last couple of years with various different things, that I don't think they would have done this.
I think I've been on record since day one that I thought it was a tremendous trade for the Knicks. And one of the reasons I thought it was a trend, and I feel that what happened, what we have now, I do not regard in whatsoever. Though any, I still have no idea what's going on with this Porzingis thing. I'm going to put that aside because I just don't know what happened. But I always thought it was a great trade for the Knicks, because of what Tim just said, which is it was going to cost them assets to get rid of Hardaway, to open up space to do what they wanted this summer. They did not even have one full max slot. And now they got themselves to two, and they made the decision that they were not going to extend Porzingis. However, they came up to that mind. I thought from the day they made the trade, they did really well on it. I don't know how you felt about it, Bobby, but I know you've been involved in trades like this before. And to be able to get young players, draft picks and prospects, I'm sorry, prospects, draft picks and cap relief in the same trade, I thought it was a great trade. And I didn't understand how they were getting ripped so much for it.
Well, I mean, especially when you give up an unprotected first and you are basically relying on Luka Doncic, who's a great rookie, and Kristaps Porzingis to be able to attract another free agent there, I think it leaves you a little bit vulnerable that, you know, basically you're kind of putting a lot of your eggs in the basket here. And I think it will depend on if that first goes to Atlanta this year, and then everything gets kind of pushed back if it doesn't. But yeah, I mean, you're basing it on cap space to build around. I think when certainly there's a certain sense of arrogance, I guess, you know, whenever you trade a first round pick, Brian, and it's unprotected, you've got some arrogance about it. I'm telling you, I've been there before.
I was going to say, in multiple
first round picks that you think you will be good for the long, for the future. And that you will continue to build and put pieces around, and when you don't, it leaves you open to criticism. And I think with New York back in late January, early February, is that you had to make a decision. You know, were you going to be married to Kristaps Porzingis for 5 years, $158 million, or whatever the number was going to be? And they made a decision that they were not comfortable with that.
Speaking of the Nets, real quick, it was a report over the weekend. Now, it was denied. I think it was denied by the Nets. There's a report over the weekend.
It was denied by Prokhorov's people.
Okay, right. So Prokhorov's people, that Joseph Tsai, Tim, when was Joseph Tsai supposed to be able to buy the rest of the Nets in Barclays Center? Was it 2 years from now?
I'm not even 100% sure he had an option on the arena. I think that might be new, but the option for him to take control of the team was in 2021, I believe.
Right, so 2 years from now. Well, there was a report in the New York Post over the weekend that Joseph Tsai is in negotiations to buy the Nets this summer. He bought – he is a Taiwanese billionaire, one of the founders of Alibaba, which is kind of like the Google of China. I think that might be simplifying a little bit too much, but let's just stick with that. And he owns 49% of the Nets with the option to buy the rest of the team. And it sounds like, according to this report, and it's somewhat believable to me, that he may buy the Nets out this summer, which would potentially make things interesting. The Nets are moving in a positive direction. I think they're probably pretty happy with Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson, their coach-GM combination. But that would be interesting if the changeover happened this summer, see how aggressive they would be in signing their free agents and going after free agency, just something to put on the radar. But since we're talking about the Mavericks executed a win on Sunday that was one of the more stunning wins of the season. I don't know how you guys felt about it. They went into Oklahoma City, a team that is fighting for playoff positioning, and even forget about playoff positioning for a moment. They're trying to get their legs underneath them because they have been in free fall. Luka Doncic was out with a leg contusion. I can't remember if it was calf or thigh. He was out. Game in Oklahoma City. Remember, we talked in the pod last week about the Mavericks not staying in Miami over the weekend. Bobby, the Mavericks played in Miami on Thursday night, didn't play again until at Oklahoma City on Sunday, elected not to stay in Miami or go to Oklahoma City. They went home. But whatever they did, it must have worked. Doncic didn't play the full Thunder team as it is. You know, their star players, what Westbrook, George, and Steven Adams played. and the Mavericks go in and win. Just a really troubling loss for Oklahoma City. They're now 7-13 since the All-Star break. They got fortunate that the Spurs also lost. Greg Popovich got ejected. They lost to the Kings, I think it was. Really troubling signs here, Tim, as to what's going on with the Thunder. They did fall to 8. They didn't really lose ground because the Spurs also lost, but we're getting a little beyond the everything's going to be okay zone here. This is a troublesome situation.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you kind of touched on it. They're 7-13 since the All-Star break. They're 2-7 their last 9 games. You know, that includes losses, you know, to Miami. It's not very good. Obviously, this Dallas loss is not good. You know, they got blown out by the Warriors. You know, they just haven't looked the same. You know, remember, it wasn't long ago we were talking about Paul George being right in the MVP race, right, with James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And, you know, whether it's this shoulder injury Paul's had for a while, but he hasn't been the same player over the last month. And because of that, you know, Oklahoma City all season long, I think you guys would agree, their margin for error on offense was very slim, right? Their defense is top-notch, but they've had trouble scoring, and it was kind of Paul George going nuclear that really – allowed them to become an elite team, and him coming back to earth a little bit, even though he's putting up numbers, it's dropped their offense back down to a position where they're not scoring enough to beat teams. And, you know, you lose to Dallas, you lose to Memphis, you lose to Miami. That's not a great stretch, to be looking at going into this final 5 games. And like you said, they're now in 8th. If they finish in 8th, they play Golden State in the first round. They're looking at another first round exit with $260 million payroll. Like, that is certainly not what the Thunder were envisioning.
Yeah, payroll, that's including tax.
Including the tax, right. But they certainly didn't expect to be a first round and out team with what I think probably the, you know, either the most expensive team of all time or one of them. I think that's got to be the most expensive team, right?
Oh, it's up there. Dating my former Nets team. Well, I mean, we still have the record for the largest tax bill, and it's amazing what Oklahoma City was able to do to, we were talking about them, $300 million? And then you make the Carmelo trade, you make multiple trades, and the thing with this team, guys, is that if you lose in the first round, let's say to, a Golden State, or even if it's Denver, this is your roster. Going into next season, you basically have Raymond Felton and Nerlens Noel as your free agents here. You'll add a pick in the teens likely, but this is your same group, and you're faced with the same financial restrictions that you had last summer here. So there's not much wiggle room as far as where this team can go. I think we probably got that offense with the way Paul George played earlier for most of the season, kind of probably camouflaged a lot of, you know, deficiencies here.
Yeah, well, they're 23rd in 3-point percentage, but that's a season long number. I don't have it what they've been since the All-Star break. And they had sort of the, you know, not that Alex Abrines has actually shot the ball that well this year, but he had sort of a personal issue, and he basically left the NBA. And they did sign Markieff Morris into that roster spot, which I thought was a good signing. And he's got a neck issue, and he's missed some games both in Washington with Oklahoma City with it. And he has just not played well at all. He's only shooting 35%. He has not been the player that I thought he would be for them. I just assume he's not healthy. And they just, like you said, like Tim said, they can't score. And it's a real issue because, Dennis Schroeder is a guy who, you know, when they've played well, he's looked good, but he's not been a reliable player. I suppose he's tradable, but only if you're willing to take on money, probably. And
certainly they were hoping, I think, he would play better than he has so that they could flip him again this summer. I mean, I think that was the plan in the first place, right? And I would say he's played kind of the way he's always played. to your point, and that's not going to make it easy to move him.
He has decent numbers, but he's not efficient.
Right. Like I said, he's played the way he's always played. And just to back up your point, just to back up your point on the Thunder, because I looked it up, since the All-Star break, they are dead last in field goal percentage, 42.6%, a full percentage point worse than the Knicks, I think, to put it mildly, have not been trying. And they're 28th in three-point percentage at 32.8%. So that is dreadful, to put it mildly.
The only thing I can say is that, again, I still think, and this has gotten me some people have reacted to me saying this, I still think that the Nuggets are a team that people still think are vulnerable. And the Nuggets have been actually struggling a little bit with their offense this last week and a half, not sort of ramping up. Nikola Jokic was ejected out of a game. They lost yesterday at home to Washington. Yikes. Jokic has been ejected twice in the last like 10, 12 days. Bobby Portis said after the game that their game plan was really just to be rough, really rough and physical with Jokic, which I think is what's been happening with some teams as we've gotten to this part of the season. It seems to be the book now to be rough with Jokic, and it's getting underneath his skin a little bit. He's snapping at the officials. Michael Malone kind of, called him out yesterday and said, you've got to keep your composure, but, people are going to see this and they're going to only do this more, and teams are only going to get away with more roughhousing in the postseason. Jamal Murray turned his ankle again yesterday. They have a fabulous record. They're great at home, although not yesterday. I just think that there is some vulnerability there. And if the Thunder can get themselves back to where they were, I mean, there's hope for them, even at this playoff seed. But how long am I going to be saying this? I mean, Tom Haverstraw, our colleague, wrote this piece a few years ago where he really analyzed this and said that momentum into the playoffs is a myth, that the way you play your last 10 games has no effect the way that you play into the postseason. And certainly the Warriors were an example of that last year, where they finished, I think, 7-10 down the stretch and then rolled to a title. But, at some point this has got to matter, Bobby. At some point, you have to say that you've got to be able to do better. And I don't know what they can do at this point to shake themselves out of it.
Well, I mean, you're basically going to have to rely on your two horses. I mean, Westbrook and Paul George, to kind of lead you. But, going back to where Denver is, Brian, I mean, I think there is some vulnerability. I'm concerned about point guard play in the playoffs. I mean, you've got, besides Millsap and Mason Plumlee, and certainly Isaiah Thomas, who's not a part of the rotation, you don't have any veterans who've ever been in a big playoff games. And the frustration level with Jokic concerns you, because there's been a couple of ejections now here. And when things get tight, are you confident in Jamal Murray running his offense in a half-court game? And you guys know this, when the playoffs start, it's a different beast here. So if you are Oklahoma City, you are probably circling that Denver is probably your most favorable opponent. I mean, I think it would probably more favorable than playing Houston in round one, just because of that lack of inexperience there.
Well, and to back up your point, Brian, Denver in the month of March, 21st in the NBA in offense, and ironically 12th in defense, which is the reason why they've been able to kind of stay afloat, kind of. Which is,
well, 12th in defense is where they've been most of the year.
Right. But I just meant, if you think about Denver, that's not, you don't think about their offense being worse than their defense. And they're a negative differential. They're 9-6 in the month. They were negative by a couple tenths of a point. And 21st in offense, if they're in the bottom third of teams in the first round of the playoffs in offense, it's going to be hard for them to get out of the first round, put it mildly.
I just want to point something out about Russell Westbrook. So I don't know if anyone, I don't know where you guys are on the PER stat, player efficiency rating. I realize that there are some flaws with it. I'm not here to defend it. Our former colleague John Hollinger created it. But I think it's a good sort of catch-all barometer of how efficient a player is playing. And I certainly can tell you that, having tracked LeBron very closely over the years, that when LeBron is at his best, this is when his PER is at his best. I don't worry about the scoring and shooting percentages. Well, it's tied to the shooting percentages, but PER is the real dipstick with LeBron James. So 2 years ago when Westbrook won the MVP, his PER was 30.6. It was number one in the league at that time. And even though you may have thought that he was chased, he was stat chasing at times, I certainly did. If the guy is number one in the league in PER, I mean, you go back and look at the history, we're talking about most of the time, if you're number one in PER, you're either winning the MVP or you're in the top three. Last year, his first year with Paul George, he dipped to 24.7. Still very strong, but definitely a dip. And okay, I mean, the team makeup changed. This year, he's down to 20. In 2 years, he's gone from 30 to 20 in PER. And that is very troublesome to me. And you want to know, you know, PER is largely a function of how efficient you are in offense. You want to know why the Thunder can't score, can't do stuff. Westbrook from 30 to 20 in 2 years. Hey, Andrew, did you know the basketball season is in full swing? We got the Final Four this week. Yes. It was quasi rhetorical, but you could answer. It would have been funny if you're like, no, it's not. It's much better in November or February. We got the Final Four this week. Then the NBA playoffs start right on the heels of that. We got 2 months of great basketball, and then we go right into draft, free agency. This is the time of year when people care about basketball, and the playoffs, of course, is when the contenders outperform all the rest. And whenever you're driving your family and friends this basketball season, or frankly, football season or baseball season, you should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely. Oof. You should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the court. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help show you what's best. Goodyear, more driven. To stick with a little bit with that Dallas win, though, that was an extraordinarily interesting win because there's this amazing drama that is playing out right now. And I know we talked about the lottery last week, and I'm sorry if you're tired of lottery talk, but I haven't reached my end point of fascination. So Atlanta won yesterday. They played the Bucks. Trae Young hit another game winner on a putback. Look, they beat the Bucks. It wasn't the greatest win in history. Giannis didn't play. Bledsoe didn't play. Middleton didn't play. Snell didn't play. Brogdon didn't play. They basically rested their starting lineup and still almost won. But that victory, you know, Atlanta's now won 6 of the last 10. And they are, I was thinking that Dallas was going to lose. Dallas ended up winning, but Tim, they are dangerously close now to Dallas in the standings. They're only separated by 2 games in the win column. It was very nearly, if Oklahoma City had taken care of business yesterday, it would have been 1. And the reason this is important is because Dallas is 6th. If they get to 5th, that means that they don't have to move up to hold on to their pick for Luka Doncic next year. Atlanta cannot fall to 6th, right? They cannot give Dallas a chance to hold on to their pick without hitting a number in the lottery, right?
I think it's safe to say that would be the single worst case scenario for the Hawks, who have to have, if you're working for the Hawks, you have to have been going crazy watching the Mavericks over the past few weeks, right? Because not too dissimilar from last season, when I believe you and Tim McMahon wrote a certain story about the way the Mavericks are playing late in close games. You go through I'm just looking at the box score now. There's a 6-point loss, an overtime loss, a 1-point loss, a 1-point loss, there's been a lot of very close losses that if the Mavericks win, say, two or three of those games, they're in 9th right now, and the Hawks are, you know, not guaranteed of getting a top 10 pick, but their chances are much higher. Whereas now, you know, like you mentioned earlier, going way back to the beginning about whether they keep that pick, you know, a lot of the talk about that trade for Luka Doncic Trae Young trade was around, well, Atlanta's going to get another top 10 pick probably next season, right? Well, let's say the Mavericks win the lottery, right? Let's say they get Zion Williamson now that his college career is over after yesterday, and they're rolling forward with Chris Porzingis, Zion Williamson, and Luka Doncic. Well, you know, then that trade doesn't look as great, right? Whereas if they get the sixth pick, like you're talking about, or the seventh pick or the eighth pick, to go with maybe the Hawks win the lottery and get Zion, well, then it looks a lot different, you know? So there is an awful lot riding on these last few games for all these teams jockeying around for position, because, you know, you've got Memphis that's got a top eight protected pick that's got 46 losses. You have New Orleans that's trying to position itself for after Anthony Davis. They've got 46 losses. The Wizards have 46 losses, and the Mavericks have 46 losses. So all four of those teams, you know, that could jockey around a lot over the next week and a half, and that could have ramifications for, you know, several different teams as we're talking about, you know, picks going different places and trades being culminated and stuff. So, yeah, it's, you know, there's going to be a lot of focus, obviously, on, you know, the end of the race in the East for the final couple spots and where these teams in the West line up and who's playing who. But for the long-term future of the league, there's a lot of importance in these final few games for these bad teams at the bottom.
Bobby, do you does Trae Young come up with a sore ankle or something? What do you do?
Wow, man, you were on the verge of having five picks in the top 45. And now that, you know, that possibility of that maybe not getting that Dallas pick, but I mean, that's an interesting debate, Brian. I mean, you want to finish, it's almost like from a coaching standpoint, you want to finish on a strong note going into the off season, but you got to look at a big picture as far as building up these assets. But and the other thing too is interesting, guys, is that what happens with Dallas has a domino effect with New York, because if Dallas doesn't convey that pick then to Atlanta, then it pushes what they owe the Knicks back, you know, to 2022 and 2024. So there's a domino effect all around.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So Dallas, I mean, they can, they obviously are, they can't control a 1-point loss or an overtime loss. They're still competing. Some of the lineups they've put out there maybe haven't been their best lineups, and obviously the Harrison Barnes trade, you know, in conjunction with trading Dennis Smith and shutting down Porzingis, helped them to get in this situation. But, you know, it's a big factor for them too. And if I was Dallas, regardless of whether they've been actively tanking or passively tanking, I would try to lose, because you're so close now. I mean, even in the last 10 games, I mean, they were, so right now they are, you know, I guess you could say they are two games behind Atlanta, but if they don't win again, Atlanta would only be able to quote afford one win. In the last 10 games, they've made up three games in that. So in the last 10 games, it's really tightened up. And I this is real stuff. I don't know what you do. I mean, Bobby, when you guys were doing that rebuilding phase, when you guys were in, I think pretty much those 2 years in Newark, right? Those were the rebuild years before you headed to Brooklyn, before you ramped up. I mean,
yep.
Would you ever discuss with the coaches, like, hey, maybe tonight we sit Chris Humphreys. I don't know who your star player was, but Darren Williams. Maybe we just shut that down for tonight. I mean, how did you handle that?
Well, I mean, considering that, well, it's interesting because we didn't have our pick. I mean, I think we had, I think 2011, it was top three protected. That was part of the Darren Williams trade, right?
And then the 2011 was Darren Williams, right? Yeah.
And then 2012 was top three protected because of that infamous Gerald Wallace trade. So it wasn't like you're going in there, you know, and you were kind of out of it. You weren't in the top three, so you were like stuck in that in between phase. So it's like you just kind of roll out what you have. I mean, I think, Brian, when I look back on 2009-10, that year we went 12-70, and we had the number one pick going into the lottery. I think just the roster took care of itself. That roster was so bad that it just played out. I don't think we had to tell. Kiki was the coach. I don't think we had to tell Kiki Vandeweghe who to play and not to play, because he was limited as far as what he was dealing with as is.
Well, one more thing about this. So Memphis is an interesting situation. So from what I understand about this draft, this draft is tremendous if you're right at the very top. But if you're at the back end of the lottery, it's not as exciting. And I've even
somebody's described it.
as somebody's described it to me, there's a Zion tier, a Ja Morant tier, an RJ Barrett tier, and an everyone else tier. And if you're anywhere after three, it's not so great.
I mean, I hear that every year, but I think there's players in the draft every year, but okay. So Memphis, if their pick falls, is it eight or lower, or it's top eight protected? So nine
or
lower.
Top eight protected. Yeah.
So nine or lower, it conveys to Boston. Which, you know, Boston might want to use that in a Anthony Davis trade package. And they have been very clear that they want to give their pick away this year. The pick is top six protected next year if it doesn't convey, and then unprotected the year after that. And this summer, you know, Tim, you and I were talking about this earlier. I assume they're going to go through with trading Mike Conley. And so I don't think they're going to get better next year. And you don't want to be fighting keeping your pick or not next year. So I do believe them when they say that they want to give their pick away. They want to finish outside the top eight. Well, right now they're basically in a three-way tie for the sixth pick with Dallas. They all tied in the loss column. So while we may have Dallas and Atlanta, you know, trying to figure out maybe how to lose a game or two, we have Memphis who's really trying to win because they really want to get out to ninth, which they could do with a three-game win streak would probably do it. And so you have all this weird jockeying in there because of the pick protections, which I think is fascinating. And, you know, Memphis is playing like they want to win. I mean, if you watch them play, they're competing every night. So we've got some teams in there that could benefit from losing. Some teams could benefit from winning. Bobby, I don't remember this being this congested with different goals and everything like this before.
Well, and Brian, too, you've got, I mean, who thought we'd be watching Memphis-Dallas on April 15th and Memphis-Dallas on April 7th? Those are two games that Memphis has that's going to determine a lot. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's the basis of when you owe picks and you protect them to a certain degree, there's a rollover effect here as far as what's going to happen. There's not as many picks going out in the future. This year, though, it seems like there's so much contingent, you know, especially with these teams in a lottery. And then you've got the Davis factor as far as what Boston, you know, if you were Boston, do you want the ninth pick in the draft, or do you want a potentially, you know, unprotected pick 2 years from now that you can use as a trade asset?
I personally would think they'd want Memphis to keep their pick, or to Memphis to keep their pick this year, I would think, unless it jumps all the way up to one. Like, I think for them, ideally, it's in that 7-8 zone, because, you know, to Brian's point, if they do trade Mike Conley, I think it's safe to say we would think they'd be among the three or four worst teams in the league next year, and then that probably becomes an unprotected pick in 2021, and that's, in to me, extremely attractive trade asset. You know, having the ninth pick this year would be nice, but, you know, an unprotected pick a couple of years from now in a small market like that where they're not going to attract free agents, they're going to have young players to build around. You know, I mean, I guess if they get Zion, maybe they'll become a playoff team or something. But short of that, you know, to me, I don't know what you think, Bobby, as someone who's been in that spot before, kind of rooting for it one way or the other. But I feel like that's a more attractive chip for the Celtics down the road than getting the ninth or tenth pick in this year's draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially where, you know, we still got 2 months to shake it out here, but where how this draft is somewhat shaping up, I don't know how much appealing the ninth pick of in 2019 is very. You know, I think you're looking at players that I had one team deem it. It's almost like we're going to be like at a football draft here. You usually go best avail, but you're going to be teams taking guys that are juniors and seniors probably. You're going to take the same teams take based on positional needs, instead of maybe the team players that you have to redshirt for a year, the young freshmen. So yeah, if I was Memphis, I would want to, you know, certainly get rid of this year's pick to Boston, and I think probably vice versa if you're Celtics.
Yeah, so I hate to belabor. I apologize to the listeners who are tired of the lottery talk, but I there's just so much there, and it's so much affecting what's going on in the league night to night right now, and so it's fascinating, and obviously there'll be a lot of talk about the playoffs coming up. But in a lot of ways, this is these teams' playoffs right now. And there's a lot to watch, you know, game to game. And we have the fight at the back end of the Eastern Conference playoffs. And I mean, to be honest with you, I'm paying more attention to the lottery situation and where these picks go and everything like that than I am to whether, you know, Orlando, Charlotte, or Miami gets the eighth spot. Cause I just don't think any of those teams, other than getting to watch Dwayne Wade a few extra games, I'm not really seeing anything exciting about those teams, whereas how this falls could dramatically affect the short-term future of the league, especially if one of these teams gets lucky. If you're listening to us here on the Hoop Collective, we know you're a big NBA fan, and if you're a big NBA fan, you probably already know about Zach Lowe and the Low Post podcast, but if for some reason you don't, we really encourage you to go over to our partner here at ESPN, where he has some of the best interviews with journalists, with coaches, with players, with other personalities. Nobody talks about or sees the NBA the way that Zach Lowe does. It plays out every week on the Low Post. Highly encourage you to check that out if you aren't already. And if you are, go listen to it again, because, you know, hearing it again will only make you doubly smart. That's the Low Post podcast. You can get it on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Going to the other end of the spectrum, the Golden State Warriors, in the course of 3 days, had a game where they lost in Minnesota in one of the stranger games that you'll ever see with officiating. I think the correct thing happened, but they lost the game. They completely lost their cool. They acted like jerks with the officials. I was kind of surprised that there was no fines handed down for the way they behaved.
I've never seen anybody taunt a ref the way they taunted the refs after Steph made that three. That was, it was crazy. And then they even said stuff like the ref was the MVP of the game. I couldn't believe they didn't get fined. Maybe they'll get fined today, I guess, but I thought that was unbelievable.
But they've already played another game.
I guess they played a game, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Bobby, what does that say? So real quick. So Durant, Bontemps, remind me, Durant made a three and they waved it off.
Yeah, let's just run through it quick.
And they ruled it correct on the last 2 minute report.
Right. So right. Durant, so that they're down three with 5 seconds left. Okay. They inbound the ball to Durant. I didn't think it was a foul. He barely gets touched by the player, then rips his hands back because he's afraid he's going to foul Durant while he's shooting a three. Durant makes the three, runs to the other end of the court to celebrate, and they say he got called on the floor. So the Warriors
would have tied the game
with 4 seconds to go. Warriors all go insane. Then they inbound the ball to Steph in the corner. Jared Bayless, for some reason, doesn't foul him, even though he's like a foot inside the three-point line for a couple seconds. He then does this crazy step-back three, makes it with a second to go or half a second to go.
Ties the game.
Sprints by the ref, points at the ref, laughs in the ref's face, runs by him. They're all pointing at the ref, making fun of him. Just Merritt Kogut, just completely ridiculous. Then they go down the other end, half a second left. They inbound the ball. They try to run a fade to Towns at the basket. The pass is like 15 feet over Towns' head. There's no way he's going to catch it.
I would have been uncatchable in the NFL.
Uncatchable in the NFL. Pass, you know, no pass interference. Durant grabs Towns kind of, but like I said, clearly wasn't going to catch the ball. They call a foul on that play, and then they lose the game.
So he did kind of, foul him. He did sort of hold him when he was trying to get loose. But Bobby, I don't think they normally would call that, especially in a tie game. You wouldn't want the game to hinge on that. But it certainly looked like a retribution call, even though it wasn't phantom. Like Durant definitely.
That was a better call. That was a better call than the foul on the Durant three, I thought. I mean, I thought that was more of a foul, to be honest, than that call was. Personally.
Sometimes emails that I get from the league go into my spam folder for some reason. And I honestly was like, wait a minute, I didn't see any fines. Cause Steph Curry came out after the game and called out, referees by name. And I was like, well, I must have just missed this fine email. It must have gone into my spam folder. I mean, Bobby, I can't believe it.
Draymond's tweet was pretty bad too. I mean, I don't know, Brian, if you saw his tweet.
I don't think I did.
Basically, he had two tweets. It was MK, and then the next tweet was TD.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. I missed that. Did he delete those?
I didn't see that. I didn't see that either. That's incredible.
So basically, MAGA Kogan, what he's basically saying, he's comparing him to Tim Donaghy is what he actually said that? He tweeted that. I didn't see that.
That was a tweet. Yeah.
First tweet, TD. Second tweet, MK.
Oh, he put two tweets.
Oh, my God. One after the other.
That's kind of sly because he could wiggle out of that. But it took us
4:07 Eastern time.
Boy,
amazing.
It took us a tenth of a second to figure out what he meant, though. So. Bobby, can you believe they didn't get fined for that? Like, was Kiki off this weekend? What happened?
Well, I was waiting for the custom $25,000 fine that we usually get. So, but no, they did not get fined because you're right. They played last night. Usually the custom way to do it is you fine them the afternoon before they play. Considering that what, we saw James Harden get fined. Did James Harden get fined for the Scott Foster stuff?
Yes.
That all happened?
Did.
Yeah, he
yes,
got fined,
he
right?
Did. Yes.
And we did not see anything at all here, which is, well, usually when you call out a referee by his name, that's usually a $25,000 right there.
Well, I mean, if you can't call out the referee by his name, if you usually get fined for calling out the referee by his name after the game, what happens if you taunt the official during the game and then call him out by after the game?
Well, you're right. It would have been ballsy if he would have just teed him up right there. I mean,
that was what I thought they were going to do. I thought they were going to tee him up. I've honestly never seen players just openly like taunt a ref before, ever. Like that, it was crazy.
Like to their face, like low key. I've seen low key, but
right,
like to
their
face,
like
literally
being mad about
sticking
his,
he was pointing at him.
It was like it was like a little kid stole a toy from another kid and like pointed at him. It was like, aha, I took the toy from you. Like it was unbelievable.
It was a great shot, by the way.
It was an unbelievable shot.
And you know, typical Warriors, they come out yesterday, and I realize that Charlotte's not the not the 86 Celtics, but they won by 47 at home yesterday. 47. But I was stunned by that turn of events. I don't know, maybe in the league office they were watching the NCAA tournament and didn't see it, but I had never seen anything like that. And by the way, kind of ruined incredible shot making down the stretch, because Durant's shot was pretty spectacular. Curry's shot was difficulty 9 out of 10 difficulty. Bayless was almost standing in his uniform. And, just very surprised about that. But I will say this, the next time Draymond or Kerr or somebody complains about them, about the officials, you know, teeing them up or whatever, there's one in the bank because they got away with that. And I don't know, maybe they were trying to, maybe they were not happy with the way the officials handled it, and it was kind of a message, but I'm just guessing. I honestly don't know. But it was interesting. All right, guys. Thank you very much. I look forward to non-lottery talk. I'm not convinced that that's going to happen, though, until the lottery actually happens. But looking forward to non-lottery talk and playoff talk coming up. But Bobby, thank you for joining us. Tim, thank you for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Hahn, the producer, and Kyrie for running the show in Bristol. And have a great day, and we'll talk to you later this week. We'll